Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast. Whenever you are, wherever you are, my name is Laura Gonzalez and I welcome you to Lunatic Mondays on CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. Tonight I have a for real great friend of mine, and it's not that all my other guests are not my friends, but Blake and I know each other for like 10 years. Anyway, let me tell you about him. Blake Mileyway, a Michigan native, has been a practicing witch since childhood. As a self-proclaimed oddball, Blake has always had an affinity for the other world and tends to incorporate his spirit allies into his practice whenever he can. When he's not working magic, he can generally be found spending time at Mileyway Brothers, his Chicago-based witchcraft shop that co-owns with his brother, Wick. Both Blake and his brother make a point to travel to Cornwall, England, several times a year to disconnect from the hectic city life for a bit. While out there, they make a point to connect with with other witches to learn other points of view on the craft and new ways of making magic. Blake currently resides in Highland Park, Illinois, with his spoiled cat, Black Cat, Beans. Fiends. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did. You did, Fiends. That's my little baby girl.
Welcome, welcome to the show. How are you, honey?
How are you, Laura?
I'm puzzled because I cannot believe that we've known each other for so long and that I have
Yeah.
never invited you to the show. Like, this is ridiculous, but
I think it's been longer than 10 years though. Now that I'm thinking about it.
yeah, because it's since you moved to Chicago, basically.
So yeah, no, I think you're about 10. That's just crazy that it's been that long. Oh my gosh. I'm
Yeah.
not in my 20s anymore.
Tell me about it. I'm basically jumping into 50 very, very soon. And but so for people that don't know you, tell us about how did you get into witchcraft? Like, how you always knew you were a witch?
Well, it's one of those weird things where I felt like I've always known I was a witch, but when I was 5 or 6, I wasn't running around saying that what I was doing was witchcraft, if that makes sense. One of my favorite stories of my childhood, and my family still owns the house to this day, so I can verify that this is true, is when I was a kid, 5 or 6, I used to climb in a tree that was growing outside our house. In the front yard. And this was a hawthorn tree. And I don't know if you've ever seen a hawthorn tree before, but it is covered in thorns, like 2, 3 inch thorns. Like it's not a very friendly tree to look at. But I vividly remember climbing up in the branches of this tree, hanging out in the branches all afternoon, and never once got poked or scratched or hurt by this tree otherwise. And then you study the folklore and the mythologies of these trees going like later on in life when you start practicing the craft, and you see that it has a strong affinity to witches, the other world, the fairy folk, and things like that. It's like, oh, it's just things like that that have always been at the forefront of what I was doing. And a less popular one by my parents was this little pet toad that I used to keep. There was this pet toad that would just hop up to the door every morning when I would leave for school. And I made friends with it. I gave it a home. I offered it water. I would tell it about my day. And it was probably one of the weirder things that I do. But then you realize later on in life that the toad is associated with witch initiation. And I had a, lack of a better word, a relationship with this toad. And then as you study later on, and that's when you start formalizing and connecting the dots, and you realize, oh yeah, what I've been doing my whole life is witchcraft.
That is wonderful. You are one of the most powerful witches that I know. And
Oh, well, thank you.
I remember when we were at person who we're not gonna name house, and we were doing a spell, and then Blake opened some portals or whatever, and I'm like, dude, this is too much. It was
It's
so much fun. To practice alongside with you. And so you've been practicing basically all your life.
As long as I can remember, like there hasn't been a time where I wasn't doing something that could be perceived as witchcraft.
And did you grow up with any said religion at home? Did you have like a religious practice or what
Kind of, we went to church and stuff like that as need dictated, I suppose is the best way to put it. Like we weren't habitual churchgoers, but I think the religion, and I'm using air quotes, I know everybody can't see this right now, that we were, told to follow was, do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because you're afraid of going to hell. And I think with that kind of upbringing, in my opinion, it kind of led me to develop and explore my craft a little bit more. So yes, there was a religion in the household. If somebody asked, we would say, "Oh yeah, I guess we're a Catholic household." But there wasn't like any formal Catholic processes or beliefs or customs or anything like that.
You're the first person that I met, because back in that day I was heavily Wiccan, right? And I say this not with disdain, but with lots of love, you know, my first introduction to magic and witchcraft as a spiritual practice was through the religion of Wicca. You were the first person that I've met that were not religious, but that you practice in witchcraft, but it's not a religious aspect of it for you. Can you expand on that for people that probably don't know how that works?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's an important one and one that we literally talk about daily in our shop. So I, like a lot of young witches here in the States, probably got started on, Wicca, Scott Cunningham, Ray Buckland, things like that. That's what we had available. That's what we had accessible. And somebody might have to fact check me on this. But one of the reasons that Wicca was so prevalent in the States is because, Raymond Buckland, when he was studying with Gardner, he came over to America, brought all of his writings and teaching, that became widespread, and that's kind of what we understood to be witchcraft. But what we don't always necessarily see looking at the service of Wicca is that there's an entire history before Wicca was conceptualized by Gardner, and that does not discredit or devalue Wicca in any way, shape, or form. It's a beautiful religion. The rituals are absolutely beautiful. But what I didn't want to do was go from one religion into another, like just kind of jump. Like I already had the religion, quote unquote. So I wanted something that was just a little bit more. I'm struggling to think of the word for it, but just not so structured and a little bit more fluid. Which is why I started exploring, what witchcraft was like before Wicca became popular. And yeah, I think every Wiccan is a witch, but not necessarily every witch is a Wiccan. And yeah, for me, it's more about like I don't necessarily just want to say operative and focusing on results, but it's more about getting your hands dirty with practice. It's more about that connection to the spirit world as opposed to just being spiritual. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I love that I heard once again the phrase that I've heard you say for a decade. Every Wiccan is a witch, but not every witch is a Wiccan. And I think it's good that people understand and comprehend that there are more ways of being a witch than there are people on the planet, because you have Catholic witches, you have Jewish witches, you have agnostic witches, you have witches of all flavors and colors.
Well, and then I get frustrated. One of my personal pet peeves is when I hear people like bad mouthing Wicca. I'm like, okay, fine. You're not Wiccan. I get it. You don't have to like cause a ruckus over it. Just let people do their thing. And it's just there are, you're right. I mean, there's a different way to practice the craft for every person on the face of the earth. And I feel like, there's a lot of like people judging other people because they choose to be Wiccan or they choose to follow the Wiccan reader. They choose to do this. They choose to do that. It's like, it just doesn't matter. Like if you only focus on yourself, focus on your craft, focusing on doing what works for you, everyone's going to be a lot happier. And, but yeah, I mean, no one is right or wrong in how they're practicing, worshiping, creating magic, casting spells or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's great to In my case, you know, and in this very moment, it's great to know that people who listen to the show, they might be like, oh, but I don't abide by the Truffle Law, or I don't want to celebrate eight Sabbats, or the Sabbats or the Esbats or whatever. And you don't have to. I mean, you have to do what makes you happy, you know. You know what always, when I hear people talking about let people have nice things, I always think about the pumpkin spice. And how when it's the season for pumpkin spice, and everybody's like, oh my God, you know, like let people enjoy what they like and be who they are and have fun with it.
Oh my, I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people that has to have my pumpkin spice latte every like September 20th, whenever it drops. Like that's me.
Yeah.
Just let me drink my PSL in peace.
And what's wrong with you drinking your latte the way you want it? And I drink my coffee with lots and lots of milk. Sue me. What does that affect other people? You know, like it really does not affect other people. And we all have to kind of like get on that wavelength that I've been saying, Blake, for the last, I don't know, 7 years since I learned the phrase. The four most magical words are you do you, boo. Like, do you, and then let me do me, and be happy.
You do you, boo. I like that. That's so true.
I love it. I love it. I heard it from my friend Rosé, and Rosé, thank you for teaching me that because it, I have implemented that wholeheartedly on all my teachings. You know, like do what makes you happy and do what empowers you and what makes you a better person. You know, and speaking of empowering people. You have the shop. We're going to talk about the shop, but the way you are empowering witches to come and practice with y'all at this shop, I love it. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of that, how did the shop came about with your brother? Like, what? When I turned around, suddenly you have a shop. I'm like, what?
Well, God, it's such a long, convoluted story, and I would almost venture to say that it happened by accident. So we knew that we wanted to host workshops. We wanted to start building a community for ourselves, right? Like, you know, people that maybe have the same beliefs that we were, that maybe were looking for that more, you know, a different type of outlet for their craft that they weren't able to find in some of the other existing groups. And so we started. We had a very small studio up in Rogers Park, like a small office space. It was probably like 15, not even like 10 feet by 4 feet across. Like it was a baby, like it was tiny. And this was pre-COVID. We would host little workshops through there in the first floor of this apartment building where the office was. And we started off as like one person showing up for our first event, and then it just kept growing and growing and growing. And eventually we outgrew the space. You know, we would be turning 20, 30 people away for these events because the space could only hold 10 people plus us, you know. Our lease ended there, and we were looking around, and as fate or as magic would have it, I should say, we found our first storefront. And the lease or the rent was not much more than we were spending on the studio. And you know, Wick and I were like, you know, Wick is the one that boy's brain, I'm telling you, he can see something and then draw it and just bring it to life. But me, I'm like the numbers one. I'm like, you know, we would only have to do a little bit of retail on top of our workshops in order to sustain this at the level that we were sustaining it previously. And we took a risk. We did it. We took a risk. Like we marketed ourselves. Like, yeah, it's not about the store. You know, there's plenty of great occult stores in Chicago. Like we want to focus on the events. And we did. And then COVID hit. We couldn't do events anymore. So we had to change our approach to that pretty quickly if we wanted to keep things going, which is how we really started getting as comprehensive as we are with our retail offerings. And then after the restrictions started to ease, you know, we had all of our retail that we had really polished in on. We had all of our events that were really operating at, like, I mean, so highly. And we just continue to grow from there. And that's how we're in the space that we're at now.
And it's a wonderful space. And I have to say, if I may, Blake, real quick, I'm there right now. We are there. We are here, but we are there. So we are there. Why, Laura? What the heck is Laura talking about? The brothers have been gracious enough to allow me to hold services there. And after a long hiatus, because I, when COVID hit myself, I stopped offering rituals. And the brothers have allowed me to host new moon ceremonies there at the Malaway Brothers. So today, January 23rd, at this very hour, we are at Malaway Brothers celebrating the new moon or new moon ceremony. And I want to say thank you, Blake, and thank you to your brother, Whit, for allowing me to do this. We're going to hold those ceremonies monthly. We're also going to be doing tarot readings there regularly. Stay tuned for deets. And it is great that you have also all kinds of events happening there, book signings, classes, readers. Tell us a little bit about the events that are happening there.
Yeah, definitely. So, oh my gosh, our calendar is so diverse. We hold events for every full moon. We do open rituals every full moon. We do charge like a small fee on those to help us kind of like recover the cost of like the supplies and tools, and it also helps ensure that like the serious like you're not going to get some of the, for lack of a better term, like the people that want to mooch or take advantage, right?
Exactly. Yep.
And then for the Sabbats and the high holidays, those are all open to the entire community, like no charge for those. We have 50, 60, 70. I mean, our biggest one was about 150 people that came out for one Sabbat. And gets a little crazy. Like, we were filtering in between the store and like the al fresco space, like across the street from the shop. And yeah, so those are some of like the rituals that we'll host. And then as far as the workshops go, I would say the workshops are some of my favorite because, Wick and I, we each take turns like setting up the calendar of workshops for every. For each month, and we choose topics that really kind of cater to us, or really kind of like just cater to our interest. And because of that, it's like our area of expertise is what we can talk about. We can really teach about it, and then we really make a point to not only just have a lot of good, valuable, like high quality information, but we also make every workshop hands-on. Right. So there's a hands-on component to everything that we're doing, whether it's creating a charm, doing a group ritual based off of a teaching, casting a spell, or making a potion. Like there's always something hands-on to do. I would say that the October calendar though is my absolute favorite, naturally, right? Halloween, you got to do the good stuff. We do our spirit circle every year. We actually take a small group of people out into the cemetery and we teach them how to work with the spirits graveside. Graceland Cemetery has been absolutely amazing for that. So for all your burial needs, like we highly recommend Graceland. They're so supportive of like the pagan community and stuff like that, which has just been refreshing. And yeah, it's just it's there it's so who dies such a diverse calendar. It's so great.
It is great, and again, I'm very grateful to be, that is my home from now on. Like I say, starting today, and yes, we charge a little fee because, of course, we have to recover costs. And for people who don't know, I still haven't mastered flying on a broom, so Uber and Lyft they cost money,
Yeah, it's not cheap.
but other than that, it's very, very affordable for most people. And I hope that you join me. I'm gonna be there doing new moon on Mondays, and I call it new moon on Mondays like the song. And I'm like, yeah, it's like the song. I don't care. I'm showing my age. So we're gonna be doing that. Tell us a little bit now. I really want to talk about this little book, and I'm doing big air quotes because Death's Head, Animal Skulls and Witchcraft and Spirit Work. I have to tell people, this book is very small physically. What you pack on this book, Blake, it's a kick.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, first of all, and this is no secret for anybody, everybody knows that I'm a low slow reader. It has to do with being ASL. It takes me longer to read things. And when I grab the book, I'm like, oh, good, it's a small book. I'm sure I can read it. I couldn't put it down.
Oh,
So I did write it on a day. Yay! And you packed so much in this book. It's an amazing book. So I know what inspired you, but for people that haven't got their hands on the book, what inspired you to write this book?
yeah. So, I think, oh my gosh, COVID. I feel like that's all we can talk about going into COVID. That's all we can talk about coming out of it. But COVID like really forced me to like connect with the spirit world. Like I'm a very social person. Like if you come in, I will talk your head off. You gotta tell me to shut up. So, when we couldn't be around people or talk to people, like naturally I started talking to the spirit world. And that was a big part of the motivation for writing the book was like, yeah, like I'm having all of these amazing experiences when I really can't do anything but explore the other worlds. And part of it was like, I don't want to forget this. Like I want to write it down. I want it to be memorized. Like I want to keep like a record of everything that I'm doing to connect with like the spirit world. And Death's Head was like the manifestation for that. And I'm sure we'll talk about it, but like, we also have our publishing company, Cross Crow Books, which is just like kind of exploded in the best possible way. And like we wanted to do one book on our own just to see if we could get a book out there. Like, can we actually get a book designed, printed, and into stores? And so that was kind of like our way to like rip the Band-Aid off and just see if we could. So it was a mix of wanting to kind of like keep track of my own experiences, my own spells and rituals, and see if we could make this publishing dream that we had a reality.
So this is the first ever Cross Crow Books.
That's the first one. Yep, I think it came in
Wow.
around 30,000 words or so. We typically aim for around like 60,000, 65,000 for our manuscripts. So that was the very first one that we ran through CrossPro. Yeah.
That is amazing. I love that historical part of it, that your book was the first one. That is pretty
Yeah.
cool.
Thank you.
I love all the rituals that you put here, all the recipes and everything. And I'm a chicken. I will never do it. I'm too, that's not my practice. But again, everybody has their practice. Speak to us a little bit about the misunderstood
Yeah.
art of necromancy.
Yeah, so everyone thinks, ooh, necromancy, raising the dead, right? And that's part true. No, I'm just kidding. No, necromancy is not so much about like just raising the spirits of the dead. It's about communion with the dead. It's about partnering with the dead. It's not about commanding or controlling the dead in any way, shape, or form. And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions about spirit work. And I talk about this a little bit in the book, but the spirit world has something to gain from working with us, just like we have something to gain working with the spirit world. And it is my belief, just want to preface this by, this is just my point of view, that we partner with the spirit world for wisdom, guidance, spells, power, whatever the thing might be, whatever that the need might be. And then the spirit world in return, they get our offerings. They get wine, they get food, they get met like us thinking about them, like our emotional investment. And these are things that the spirit world can't get without human involvement. And that's the wholeness and freshness of life, like the spirit world cannot experience life without human interaction. And that's where that win-win partnership between us and the spirit world comes into play.
And they said, God created man and men returned the favor, right?
Yeah,
Like,
right.
so we are in a way. I love how you phrase it, bringing life to the spirit world. And when
Yeah.
I say I wouldn't do it, is I wouldn't do it for I don't have the discipline, for I don't have the time. Thank you, God, as I'm busy all the time.
Yeah.
Or I guess I wouldn't make the time. It's just not part of my practice. But I love how you speak about having discipline doing this kind of work. So for people that haven't read the book, because you and I
Yeah.
are talking about the book already and we haven't said what the book is about. So give us a snippet of what the book is about.
Yeah, so the book really is focused on using animal skulls as a vessel to hold and house spirits and work with spirits. And I think you're absolutely right about the discipline for it. Like you can't have a kid and then forget about the kid. Well, I guess you could, but it's not recommended, right? So like if you're gonna partner with the spirit world, like it's a partnership. You gotta fulfill your end of the deal. If you're gonna make an offering on a Tuesday, you gotta follow through with that offering on a Tuesday. And you've really gotta deliver on the commitments that you make. Otherwise, you're gonna find that you're not really getting a lot out of the book, out of the work, you know? And it takes time. It takes time to build up that trust and that familiarity with the spirits. It's not something that happens overnight. You know, my favorite example of this is if I walked up to a complete stranger on the street and said, "Can I borrow $20?" They would say, "You know, get the hell away from me, Blake." But if I said, "Hey, Laura, can I borrow $20?" You'd say, "Sure, yeah,
Absolutely.
pay it back next week." And that just attests to our 10-year history of knowing each other,
Right,
right?
right.
So it's the same deal when working with the spirit world, in my opinion. You got to put in the work and fulfill your end of the, you know, air quote deal, to get what you need out of it.
And I think a lot of people have this idea of, because you're throwing out there words that are for people misunderstood, you know, like necromancy and giving life to the spirit and the skull being the vessel. And my question will be, how is that different from having a statue in which you set up flowers every month and light a candle? Like, what that is what I do. And while I was reading the book, I was reflecting on, like, it's the same thing. It's just the practice is different, you know, it's just the structure different.
And I have a spell on there that I really love. And every time I do this spell, it just blows my mind how intense it is. And it's to actually have dialogue with the spirit, and part of the ritual involves holding the skull, like the mouth, up to your ear. And I kid you not, like when you start going into your trance, when you start your chanting, and then you stop and you be silent, you can literally hear the voices emanating from the skull and like filling your mind. It's the most unsettling, unnerving, and incredible experience ever. But again, it takes work to get to that point. You know what I mean? And I also talk about this too, like the whole idea of skulls comes from the fact that they once sustained life, right? And if they were there to support life, they're the seat of consciousness for every creature, except octopus, which I learned. Well, I learned that on TikTok, so maybe, you know, fact check that too. But you know, the whole idea is it sustained life, it contained the brain, it contained the seed of wisdom, and all of that kind of ties in together to really enhance the information and knowledge that you're getting out of this type of relationship.
And it's amazing. I think it's like I said, you know, not part of my personal practice. I just don't go to cemeteries. I just don't do that kind of thing. You know, it's just not what I do. But it is a great way for us to learn those who do, how they do it. So if you've ever been curious, because Blake, on top of everything, the way you wrote this book, coming as a from an ESL person, it just rolls off the mouth, so to speak.
Thank you.
You can read it. It's I'm not saying simplistic, but it's not a complicated terminology type of thing. So, excuse me, if you ever were curious about necromancy or working with skull animals, and even I think, in my opinion, and please let me know if this is correct, even the rituals can stand alone. Like, even if you don't work with animal skulls, some of these rituals can stand alone for other kind of work. Was that intended, or
Yeah,
that
kind of. It definitely was. So like I fully realized writing it that no one is, well, I shouldn't say no one, but very few people are going to actually go from step one through step. I think I have like what, 12 or 13 total chapters in the book. And follow the rituals in order. Like I don't like that's I don't think that was my practice. I don't expect it to be duplicated 100%. And additionally, you know, coming into the shop, lots of people already had skulls that they had established their own sort of spirits and working relationships with on their own. And I'm like, that's fantastic. Do it. Like you already have the skull, you have the spirit, you have everything. you can use the rituals as they are at that point, and you don't need to go through like the preliminary work, the petition to the spirits of the forest to find a skull, or the ritual of cleansing of the skull. Like, you just don't have to because you already did all of that pre-work, like on your own, you know? So yeah, in that regard, the rituals can totally be used on their own, absolutely. And you know, I told you, like, this was like the virgin book, right, to see if we could even publish a book. So I am in the process of updating this book, and it's going to be divided into two sections. The major workings, which is the working of you know, putting a spirit in the skull, finding the skull, and just kind of building that relationship with the spirit in the skull. And then the minor workings, which, you know, minor does not necessarily mean less powerful, right? But the minor workings, which are rituals and spells that are intended to act as standalone, that use the spell as, or the skull as the focal point for the spell itself, as opposed to the spirit. So that's pretty cool. It draws off of like various aspects of like folklore and stuff like that to help create these. So.
I love it. I love the book. I think it's a great book. For me, your maiden voyage, as so they will say, and to be the first one for the publishing company, I love it. Like I said, it's just not my thing. I have a skull that
Yeah.
came to me on the weirdest way possible. Last year, I interviewed Christopher Hughes about Mary Lewitt.
Yep.
And the next day, I kid you not, I was working at a shop that has a huge painting of Mary Lewitt. And the following day, a person gifted me a horse's skull,
Yeah.
which is wrapped on a red piece of fabric and put away, because what I learned from Christopher Hughes is that we usually will need male energy to bring in the spirit of Mary Lewitt, because if you bring it with a female energy, it's too strong. And so the skull is there, put away.
Yep.
And as I was reading your book, how I instinctively wrap it on a cloth, I was like, it's instinct, right? And I wouldn't do the spirit, you know, because that skull, for me, is Mary Lewis. So it's
Yeah.
waiting for the right place, for the right time, for the right person. Now that I'm looking at you, I'm thinking maybe you can bring the Mary Lewis to it on the next
Oh, well.
adventure.
Thank you for thinking that I am manly. Most people don't.
Oh my God. Well, maybe we can do something for winter. Blend.
Maybe that would be, yeah,
That would be
I would
something.
totally be down for that. Well, and it's funny though, like I feel like this is the second time a horse skull has like claimed itself. Like in our shop, we ethically sourced a horse skull for sale a couple, like maybe 2 years ago or a year and a half ago at this point. And we had every intention of making this available for sale in the shop. But people just started coming in and leaving the skull like coins. They would start stroking the skull and like asking it for things. And like there was like this weird like following of the skull that we had in our shop. And we're like, well, we can't get rid of this skull now. Like everyone loves it. So, you know, we took the price tag off, and now people will come up and they'll stroke the skull while asking it for luck or asking it for a favor or whatever the case might be. They'll still leave their little offerings of coins or dollar bills, which of course, you know, we'll donate to charity when the time is right. But yeah, like what is it with the horse's skulls? Like it's the second one that was like, nope, I'm staying right here.
Yeah, they have I guess when one is open, they have an energy of their own, you know.
Yeah.
And I love how you mentioned also in the book that a lot of people might have already stumbled into a skull and have a relationship with it that can be enhanced. But I just love you so much. One of the other things that I love about the book is, like, every ship, like every relationship, it has a beginning, and it could, if needed, have an end. And I
Yeah.
love, love, love how you speak about releasing the skull, releasing the spirit.
Yeah.
I
It's
love it.
important,
I
right?
love it.
Like, I mean, even if you look at the old witch folklore, there are stories of witches getting their familiars from the devil, and these familiars were not guaranteed for life. In some stories they were, but in some cases the witch lost the familiar once the relationship had waned, once they got everything they could. And it's foolish to think that our relationship with the spirit world can't evolve or in some cases end just like everything else. But if you look at the last rites that I gave for the skull, like it's very it's not mean. It's not, oh, vanquish the spirit in eternal fire. Like it's very like, all right, I'm letting you go. Thank you for everything that you've done. Let's leave the skull free and clear, and then we can start anew. And that's the one where you kind of like have to retrieve it in the morning from the graveyard after you bury. Like it's a very moving ritual. I will say though that up by me, the cemeteries, they don't close. They don't even have gates. So you can walk in at all hours of the night. So always, never break in. Always check with your local laws and follow the rules and stuff like that. But yeah, it's important.
For somebody who grew up Catholic, and this is probably the stupidest question ever, but I have to ask, how respectful or disturbing would it be for a person to do workings in a cemetery for the spirits that dwell on the cemetery? Is that like, how do you go about
Yeah.
that ethically?
So great question. So this is one of the reasons that I started studying like pre-Wiccan witchcraft. If you look at a lot of witchcraft, pre-1940s, 1950s, a lot of the old folk traditions, and this is mainly coming from like the European folkloric witchcraft, which is, what Wicca and I immerse ourselves in, a lot of it is very heavily influenced by Christianity. In fact, a lot of the folk spells that you see end in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, right? So there's a lot of intermingling between Christianity and in witchcraft. And it is my belief that the reason you see this is because when a lot of these old cunning men, cunning women, the village wise women and wise men, the ones who were like that's like selling their spells and their charms and their potions as a way to survive. Now, keep in mind, I don't think they were always referring to themselves as witches, because to do that in the 1600s, 17, I mean, that would, not the smartest thing to do. But we know we have history that people were working with herbs and prescribing herbs to heal themselves, And if we take a look at a lot of those, they had to adapt their chants and their spells to the belief structure of the client they were serving. And 99.9% of the time, the belief structure of the client they were serving was Christian. Right, so that's why you see, like, I mean, so much magic, like, influenced by Christianity. Jemma Garey actually put together the Charmer Psalter, which is a beautiful little book from her publishing company, Troy Books, that talks about that incorporates the Psalms for magical uses. Like you have a Psalm for cursing, a Psalm for drawing love, a Psalm for healing, and it's a wonderful way that illustrates how these Christian folk traditions can be worked into traditional and magical practices.
Absolutely. And I love how you talk about the Gospel of Aradia, where the saint, or in this case Diana, is held against their will until they comply with the will of the petitioner. And that happens a lot in Catholic traditions in Mexico. The most traditional one is put in a saint. I can't remember. I think it's Saint Peter. But I can't remember because I'm not versed in that kind of magic. But you put it upside down until he
Yeah.
brings you the love of your life. And
Yep.
then once you are in a relationship, then the saint can go right side up. So it's not new.
Yeah, that's a
And
good point. Yeah.
yeah, but what you're doing with the skull is not that. That is, and I'm going to say this tongue in cheek, this is a consenting relationship. Like nobody is
Yes.
abusing anybody. All parties
Yeah.
are consenting to this, you know. As
Yeah.
soon as it is when the saint is put upside down, it's like.
Well, yeah, that's, I forgot about that. Even like in the grimoire traditions, like if you look at some of the old conjurations and like the Key of Solomon and stuff like that, they talk about threatening the spirits to manifest, otherwise you will like kill them. Like, what the f who are you that you think you can
Yeah.
like, come on.
I love it. So I love it. And of course, this book is available, of course, at the Malleway Brothers. If it's not on your local bookstore, call the Malleway Brothers. And otherwise, you can buy it on the big bad wolf called, the one online.
Yeah, it is available on Amazon. It's available at our at Malloway Bros. You can also get it at crossroadbooks.com if you're listening from elsewhere. We ship all over the world, so.
Yeah. And I will always remind people, if you need to buy stuff from Amazon, go to Amazon Smile and choose the charity of your liking, and some of your purchases will be donated to that charity. And now we're going to flip into, you have a publishing company, friend.
We
Tell me about
do.
it.
We do. Crossed Crow Books. This is Wick and I started this a year ago, just over a year ago, and we are shook at how like fast the crow has taken off. It's literally just insane. We moved into our offices. We have a few full-time employees now. And it's just incredible how fast everything has exploded. But yeah, we started Cross Crow Books for a couple of reasons. A, we were frustrated at the fact that, we were referring titles to people that would come into our shop and the titles would be out of print or they wouldn't be available for order. Well, this is irritating. Like, I want to refer this book, but it went out of print with the publisher like 20 years ago, so it's not available. Oh, the author's still alive, and copies of their book are now selling for 10, 15, 20, 30 times the original list price, and the author gets nothing from that. So that was pretty crappy. But that was like part of the motivation for us really wanting to really get Crossed Crow Books going. The reception has been, knock on wood, good so far. We just had a meeting with our folks, and 2023 alone, we have 28 titles in production. I think our first year of operation, we got about 15 to market, and we're already starting to work on our pipeline for 2024. So it's just been incredible.
Congratulations. I am
Thank you.
so happy for you because I know how hard you work, but I know also how much you love working hard. And
Yes.
this is something that Blake and I have talked in private a lot about, how the so-called workaholics get a bad rep, but we get shit done.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Like we're I mean, literally that's what it's about. Like we get a lot of stuff done. We're really trying to be author-centric. We're trying to be people-focused. Like that's really what we're trying to do. And I think we've done I'm not saying we're perfect, right? Like there's always room for improvement, but like I've been told we've got pretty competitive or pretty aggressive like royalty structures for our writers. We have a dedicated team, like I mean, from design to editing to typesetting, like cover, we pull the author in for every aspect of it, and they really have a say in how their book's gonna look. And we do offer like three editions for our books. There's the unlimited paperback, which is available for every title all over the planet. The special limited edition hardcovers. These are I wish I had an example of one to show you here. Usually bound in like either a faux leather or like a cloth, with the foil stamping on the cover. They're always like limited to up to 200 copies, hand numbered and stuff like that. And then 2 to 3 books per year we release in legacy editions, and these are no more than 10 copies, and they're the ones that are all hand bound. They have the raised spines, and they're gorgeous. We're actually in the about to release the pre-sale for Celtic Tree Mysteries by Steve Bellarmes, which is going into Legacy Edition as well. So, I mean, the book, they're just beautiful tomes.
I'm so happy for you, and I'm so happy that y'all are being so fair with your authors, that the authors are involved, because that is what we hear more with authors about their frustration I'm obviously not gonna name names or because that's not what you do. But excuse me. But I've heard, of authors that said, I wrote this book and then I have no control over what happens with it. And that is frustrating. And for people who have this wonderful ability to be able to tell a story through a book and teach us, I think it's fair to be fair. And especially with artists whom are alive, because everybody wants to make rich the dead guy. Like, the dead guy don't need the money. The one that is alive is the one that needs the money. Buy art from living artists, please.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, definitely. And I think there's been times too where an author has requested something that we know is going to impact sales for their title, like in not necessarily a good way, like in a negative way. Like, hey, if you want to do this, like this is the potential results from a sales standpoint, right? And usually when you pitch things like that, like you literally treat them like a civilized person, and they're so cooperative. They're so grateful. I will say we have some writers who are like, yep, I don't care. Just let me know when it goes into pre-sale. And we're like, okay, if you really don't want to be a part of it in any way, shape, or form, that's your choice, I guess. But we're giving you the option to.
Yeah. And I guess that's valid, right? If you are a person like I would, if I wrote a book and I seek your counsel, I'd be like, here's the book, Blake, do with it what you will. So I don't know nothing about nothing, and I trust you. And what I want to emphasize is I've known people that know their thing and work and make money, and then I know Blake. So I would be like, here's my book, honey, do with it whatever you will, because I know you will make it. You will turn it into coin.
Thank you.
So time is flying because that's what happens when you're having fun. We are
Yes.
just about to go to the hour. This show is gonna have a song. You better believe I'm gonna play a song at the end of the show. So stay tuned for at the end of the show, we're gonna listen to Celia Farran, Queen of the Bones. Of course, we're gonna listen to the Queen of the Bones. The crone collects the bones, I think, or the crone collects bones. I can't remember the name of the song anymore, but it's the perfect song for this show because it talks about the bones of animals and magic and the craft. Blake, is there anything that I haven't asked you today that you absolutely need to tell people who are listening to the show?
No, just give us a follow on our social, or come check out our shop if you're in Chicago, Malloway Bros. We're in Rogers Park. And that's it.
Check Malloway Bros. If you're in Chicago, check the Crossroad Books online. Stay tuned for amazing titles that are coming. And my dear friend, this was a long time coming. Thank you. And a personal note, I have to say thank you for the trust of holding the new moons at the Malloway Bros. And thank you for the trust of being part of your psychic people that goes there and reads tarot.
Of
And
course.
thank you to you and Wick for being such wonderful humans. And to our listeners, thank you so much for being here today. In CSMP and Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, we have over 900 hours of podcasts that you can download, listen, and share. And we are on iTunes, TuneIn, Spotify, and all places that you can get your podcasts. Just to remind you, Circle of Nature, the third Wednesday of the month with Selena Fox. Blue Marble with Charlotte Bear on the third Friday of the month. The first and third Tuesday of the month, we have Circle Talk with Deborah Rose. Paganos del Mundo on Spanish and Portuguese, produced by yours truly, every Saturday. And of course, every other Monday, we have moved to the second and fourth Monday of the month with Lunatic Mondays. I announced this already last week, but I want to reiterate to people. Lunatic Mondays has gone through a transition. I am not doing podcasts in Spanish anymore on Lunes Lunáticos. Does not, I mean, the recordings exist, but I'm not producing anymore. Lunes Lunáticos. I have been so honored to be named the manager of the station, which comes with some other duties. And because of that, I moved to only do two podcasts a month. And of course, I had to have my great friend Blake on the second one for January. So thank you so much, Blake, for being
Thank
here.
you.
And I leave you the microphone so you can say goodnight to your audience tonight.
Awesome, perfect. Well, thank you all so much for dialing in. I hope to see you guys at the shop soon, and have a good rest of your week.
And to everybody, never forget that you are loved. Bye-bye.
She lives in the woods all alone, Hey little raccoon, you don't need those bones no more, 'cause your soul is to the ethers and your body's on the forest floor, The crone collects bones. The crone gathers the bones, She reads the symbols on the stones, Gathers up herbs, you may say it is absurd, but she can cure you of your ills, so you can shake those nasty pills. She is the crone, the wisdom of the crone. Sacred powers, she has the gift of sight. She will see you through your darkest night. Bodies on the forest floor.